You know, Brittany, nothing gives me naked confidence like hitting the gym first thing in the morning. The rush, the endorphins, it just sets the tone for the entire day.
Ooh, I like that. Naked confidence.
Yeah.
It's all about the perfect playlist for me. The right music can uplift my mood instantly.
You know what a close second is for me?
What's that?
Not stinking. That's why I use Lumi Whole Body Deodorant. It's like a secret weapon against odor, powered by mandelic acid.
Yeah, you're odor-free for up to 72 hours. I love how Lumi tackles every odor concern with natural ingredients, and I appreciate its versatility. I've tried it everywhere, from pits to feet. It never disappoints. Plus, it's baking soda-free and pH balanced for safe use.
And the fact that it's clinically proven to block odor all day, well, that's a game changer.
Definitely. And with Lumi Starter Pack, new customers can get $5 off with code TLC at LumiDeodorant.com. It's a great deal for a fresh start.
Don't miss out on feeling confident everywhere you go. Visit LumiDeodorant.com and use code TLC for a special discount.
That's LumiDeodorant.com. Cheers to confidence with Lumi.
This idea around women's sexuality, it harms all of us. So I also hear from a lot of men who are genuinely, they care so much. Mm-hmm. They also learned, though, that, you know, this is what sex looks like, and it's all put a penis in a vagina, and it should take a few minutes, and it looks mm-hmm. like porn, and all these different things. And so I just think these conversations and hearing those stories, whether we share them publicly or privately, or even if we share them with ourselves, I think sure. that can be the most powerful.
You're listening to the Laughing Couple podcast with your hosts, Brittany and Ryan Ostafy. Join them weekly as they discuss topics such as relationships, kids, sex, parenting, all unfiltered and all with a healthy dose of laughter. Please welcome your hosts, Brittany and Ryan Ostafy.
Okay, welcome. We have a what I hope to be educational and spicy conversation today. We have a guest we're going to introduce you to. She is a certified sex expert. She is an author. She is a podcast host. She is a badass.
She is a badass.
Literally such badass. Please welcome August McLaughlin. How are you?
Oh, I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
Good.
Oh, thank you for coming. Thank you for, well, that's foreshadowing, isn't it?
It worked. You're very welcome.
I was like, it's our pleasure. Anyways, we have a whole bunch of topics to talk to you about today surrounding sex and pleasure and just really maybe debunking any myths that surround those two topics, like whether it's taboo or people are embarrassed to talk about it. We are trying to break down those barriers. Before we do that, we like to do this thing, which everybody in the community knows. We like to kind of humanize our guests, and we ask them, what is one thing about your partner that you absolutely cannot stand? And it, well, maybe not. You had to think about it, right? You were like, I
really did. We actually, my partner and I had a whole discussion about it. Like, we were hiking, and I was like, I couldn't think of anything at first, including also my dear loved ones, because I know it could also be like a really close friend or another family member, but... So it's not that I don't get annoyed by people, but I think one, I feel very fortunate to be surrounded by people who are just wonderful. And also it's been something that I've worked on a lot is acceptance of we are all different people and trying to be, you know, more accepting than judgmental. So it's not like our relationship started with me having no, you know, complaints. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it took me a while.
Mm-hmm. Well,
I came up with one.
Your husband is a very supportive individual because I met you. And when I met you, we were in LA. Now you're not from LA, but your husband was there at a live podcast that you were running. We don't need to go through that because we have already kind of talked about the Afternoon Delight, but he's a very supportive husband because he was in LA with you just to watch a 3-hour conversation about you and sex and orgasms and all of that fun stuff. And by the way, very educational. Mm. I was glad I was at that event. So let's hear it. How is your husband, you know, you love him, but how is he slightly annoying?
Okay. So this is something that really must be a very tender spot in myself, like historically, because I have a very big reaction to eye rolling. Mm. When someone rolls their eyes at me, I mean, not if they're rolling their eyes about something else, like something they saw on TV, but if they're rolling their eyes because of something I said or I did or something I'm doing, it just makes me want to leap out of my skin. And so this has happened a lot over the years because I do some unique things, and not everyone totally, you know, is, you know, it's also something that I think my husband appreciates, but there have been many times where he rolled his eyes, and it took me a while to say something about it. And then when I did, we had this like discussion about it. And so he was trying to be so supportive. And even just very recently he did this. It's like almost more annoying where he's rolling his eyes on the inside. So it's like, he's looking at me and he's staring and he's trying not to roll his eyes. And I'm like,
and that's his tell, and you know that he wants to.
Yes. It's almost worse. We could laugh about it later, but in that moment, I turn into like a 6-year-old, you know, where you're just like, I want my way. Like,
stop it.
You're not supposed to tell me I'm overtired or whatever it is. It's like, it really just kind of wrecks me.
That's so funny. And I love that he's like aware of it now. And so, the like ice awkward deadpan stare is probably just like awkward and just like worse, like you said, because if I'm literally trying not to roll my eyes right now and I'm just like, I feel like it would just look so bizarre. We've never had that one yet.
It's interesting because the eye roll for me was very dismissive. And then when I had children and my children rolled their eyes at me, it was very disrespectful. And I feel disrespected when someone rolls their eyes at me.
Well, it's like whatever you're saying is like, are you like, come on. I feel like it's like the verbal or the nonverbal being like, are you serious right now? Like that is.
And I'm serious. That's why I'm saying it. I'm not saying it because validate I don't want to be serious. Yeah. So yes, if it's coming out of my mouth, it's got value to me. So don't roll your eyes at me. I get mad at Riley, and then Riley sees me roll my eyes at her and she calls me out on it. We've got a 9-year-old, almost 10-year-old daughter who is going to be a lawyer. I can guarantee it. She's got a photographic memory. And if you ever create a rule, she follows that rule to a T and holds you accountable to that rule. Like hypocrisy is her. She hates it as much as I do. So it's amazing.
I feel like she almost waits. She's like, this is in the vault until you mess up and then I will own your soul. Okay.
So we never heard of that before. That's amazing.
Yeah, that
is a good one. So let's dive into you for a little bit because it's important for everyone to know who's actually on the call. Some of the stuff that you've done in your life. Let's elevate the listening of this community just so that everyone knows how important this conversation is coming from you, because it just means more when people realize who you are. So let's just dive into that. So can you give us a brief rundown of who you are, what you do, how you do it? Well, maybe not that, but who you are, what you do. And then we can dive right into the pleasure conversation because we've never had this and it's so valuable.
Yeah, thank you. So I'm a health and sexuality writer, educator, journalist. I've written several books. And my podcast is Girl Boner Radio, where I share people's true stories about sex and relationships. Many of them are very, very spicy and they're all very empowering. Because that's something I needed early on. I grew up in Minnesota in a really loving family. I also grew up not knowing anything or learning anything about sex or sexuality. And the seed was planted very early in that very awkward sex ed class. I don't know if it's the same in Canada, but here it's not very helpful. It's not required in a lot of states. It doesn't have to be scientifically accurate. And pleasure is really not mentioned. However, pleasure was alluded to in my sex ed class for someone with a penis, and they showed actually a drawing, one of those like medical drawings, not graphic or anything, of an erection. And I was like, mind blown. Like, this is, I'm like, first of all, I don't think I'd ever seen a penis. I knew penises existed, but like, it looked like a transformer. I was like, what is happening to those bodies? And then I thought, oh my gosh, something incredible must happen to my body too. So I sat there like waiting for the good news.
Yeah.
And all I got was like, don't get pregnant. If you sit on a toilet seat, you might get an STD and you're going to bleed a lot for the rest of your life. And I went home so like distraught. And I remember going out like at recess and hearing kids talk. And the first time I heard the word boner and realized, oh, that thing that happens as a boner. I literally thought to myself, what about girl boners? So I had that curiosity very early. Mm-hmm. And then in my late teens and early 20s, I was working in the fashion industry and I was diagnosed with a very severe eating disorder. And I credit embracing my sexuality for saving my life. It was this huge light bulb moment. Therapy wasn't really helping. Dietitian wasn't really helping. Wonderful people, you know, great intentions. But I really needed someone to talk to me about sex. And it happened in a college class that I was taking just out of boredom. And the teacher one day said, we're going to talk about sex. And I just, my jaw, I think, probably dropped. I mean, I had not, for someone who's so curious and was like very verbal as a kid and had a lot of curiosity, I was like, wait a minute, I don't talk about sex to anyone. Mm-hmm. Like, not even to my partner that I'd been having sex with. We never had one single conversation. Maybe talked around it, sort of. I thought I was like into sex. I thought I was like a rebel because I had sex before marriage. And that's kind of where it ended. Mm-hmm. And that moment of realizing that I hadn't talked about sex sent me on this journey. I went home like just my mind was spinning. And I was like both angry in a really healthy way and also really excited to learn about my body.
Shout out to Claritin for sponsoring this episode and providing samples.
Hey, Britt, you remember that summer a while ago I told you that my allergies were really bothering me, suggested we leave the party, but you didn't take me seriously?
In my defense, it was nighttime and I didn't see your face. Fond memory, but why are you bringing this up?
Well, I just wanted to tell you that I now have a secret little weapon called Claritin D.
So that's the magic pill that turns you from sneezy to breezy.
Yes, yes. And it's like my allergy superhero in a tiny little pill.
Luckily for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin clear with Claritin D.
Designed for serious allergy sufferers like myself, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one little pill that relieves your allergy symptoms and decongests your nose so you can breathe better.
And it's not just any allergy pill, but a fast and powerful one. It starts working in as what, 30 minutes?
No more sneezing, marathons, or feeling like my head's about to be stuck in a balloon.
And everyone around you doesn't have to stand 5 feet away while you're talking.
So I don't sneeze on them?
Quick learner.
But fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away, as you can find Claritin D at your pharmacy counter.
If you want to say goodbye to nasal congestion, runny noses, itchy eyes, ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter and you don't even need a prescription.
Visit Claritin.com right now for a discount and start living Claritin clear today.
And remember, only use as directed.
Guys, have you tried the new wellness shots from Good Vibes Juice?
We have, and they're amazing. Perfect for boosting immunity and feeling great.
Good Vibes Juice makes all natural wellness shots with ingredients that support your immune system.
And they honestly taste good. Plus, they're great to have before you feel sick or even to help you recover faster.
It's like having granny's homemade remedy, but conveniently pre-made.
They have three different shots to choose from: Sick Day, Get Well, and Turmeric Daily. The Sick Day shot has echinacea and ginger, known for fighting off colds and boosting immunity.
The Get Well shots feature elderberry, a superfood ingredient that helps increase immunity, and the Turmeric Daily has turmeric and chamomile. My personal favorite is the Turmeric Daily. It has turmeric and chamomile, which for me, having recently turned 40, is great for anti-inflammatory and calming properties.
What's great is that these shots are all natural with no preservatives or additives. You can take them as a shot or mix them with hot water for a soothing tea.
And here's the best part. Visit goodvibes.juice.com and use promo code TLC to get free shipping and 20% off your first order.
That's www.goodvibesjuice.com with promo code TLC. Let's boost our immunity and feel great with Good Vibes Juice.
I didn't know what a clitoris was prior to that point. I mean, there were so many things that I didn't know, and I have not shut up about sex really ever since. But looking back, I realized, even though I had a lot of healing to do, that that really was the moment that I stopped wanting to harm my body. Mm-hmm. I suddenly had this like curiosity and respect and the beginning of love, like the beginning of compassion and feeling, oh, it's so sad to me that this girl grew up, this little girl grew up and never knew anything about her body. And it's like someone took an eraser and said, this is not an important part of you. And then I had another big epiphany that I call the orgasm that changed my life when I
Oh, do tell.
Embrace self-pleasure. Yeah, I was 30 at that time. So, gosh, not quite a decade, but a good 6-7 years after that experience, I was then living in LA and I was in a really great relationship. And I had never masturbated before. And I just thought, why masturbate? I actually wrote a paper in college, why I don't need to masturbate. Wow. So I really thought, like, you just go have sex, which is also, I realize, a very kind of entitled view with a lot of messages from culture mixed into that. Sure. However, it really dawned on me this one night because I was at home alone. My partner was away for a while, like on a work trip. And I started to feel like blah, and I didn't know why. And I started scrolling through Netflix, and you know how it suggests shows? Mm-hmm. It suggested, and this feels like destiny to me, it suggested this French film called Diary of a Nymphomaniac. And it's very spicy. Ooh. And I started watching it, and my hand involuntarily went to my crotch. And all of a sudden, I was like a little curious teenager.
Yeah.
And I remember that we had this sex toy that had been given to us as like a gag gift. I know you've talked about how a lot of sex toys are just very, you know, phallic looking and
sure.
people make a joke out of it. So yeah. someone had given us this gift. We'd never opened it. It was upstairs in a closet. So I like tiptoed upstairs, even though I'm home alone. I'm like, I'm gonna get this toy and I'm going to do this myself. And I wrote on a pillow and pretended I was with a partner and had my first solo orgasm mm-hmm. and then promptly burst into tears because, again, I realized this whole new level of shame that I hadn't worked through and that right. I had been thinking of sexuality as something separate from me that mm-hmm. has to happen from somebody else, has to be – it's like it's not my own first. Mm-hmm. And that's when I knew. I was like, oh. This term girl boner that has been living in my heart, I need to do something with this. And so I started sharing my own story on my blog and that led to my books and my podcast and eventually here with you two.
That's so powerful in so many ways. I don't know if I've ever shared this on the podcast, but I'm gonna. So here we go. But like you talk about how when you learned about sex, like in high school, how it was so centered on like the male, right? And as you go on after high school and you like start having conversations about sex, it is very heavily kind of focused on male pleasure. And there was one other partner, you already know this, one other partner before Ryan, like, and I have dated quite a few people.
Don't like any of them.
But there's only been one other person who has ever made me orgasm other than Ryan. And I faked it for all of those other times because I was literally led to believe for so many reasons that like it did not matter if I got pleasure out of it. It only mattered if I was good enough and I brought worth to the other partner to be like, so he could leave and be like, yeah, she was great. But like literally every time in my brain, I was just like, I hope that like that was okay. Like how sad. That's so sad. And looking back now, like as a woman, two kids, especially with a daughter, I think it's just so important to have these conversations, letting our young generation understand that their worth is in everything. Like you can also claim that. You are allowed to do that. And it's not selfish, right? Like with a partner, by yourself, it's all okay. Like having these conversations, I think, allows those conversations outside of this space to happen. And the more we talk about it, like the less taboo it kind of is. And I think we are going in that direction, but it's just so powerful to hear another woman be like, I was a little like nervous to do that too. So like, thank you for sharing.
Oh, thank you for sharing. It really breaks my heart. And I'm sure you relate to this. It's fuel to the fire when you hear about mm-hmm. others' experiences like that. And that's really what I was so struck by was once I did share my story or some of my stories, the amount of other folks I heard from, uh-huh. Especially from women and men too and non-binary folks, but also this idea around women's sexuality, it harms all of us. So I also hear from a lot of men who are genuinely, they care so much. Mm-hmm. They also learned though that, you know, this is what sex looks like, and it's all put a penis in a vagina, and it should take a few minutes, and it looks mm-hmm. like porn, and all these different things. And so I just think these conversations and hearing those stories, whether we share them publicly or privately, or even if we share them with ourselves, I think sure. that can be the most powerful. I'm a huge yeah. fan of journaling for sexual self-discovery and embracement, because we often have shame we don't even realize we have. Mm-hmm. That's happened to me so many times, and I'll find another little piece of it here and another one here. And when you're journaling, you don't have to think about someone else seeing it or hearing it or judging it. And it's amazing what can come out when you just sort of like free write. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So thank you for sharing your own experience. That's mm-hmm. that's really meaningful.
So first and foremost, because I'm the odd man out here, figuratively and literally the odd man out here, I want to start off by saying I apologize to the two of you that we live in a world that you guys mm-hmm. had to experience the idea that sex was about us. Mm-hmm. And I promise you, I'm trying my best to put the work in to change that narrative. We do have a daughter who is 9, who is almost 10, and God forbid, but it's true, in a very short period of time, these are things that she's going to be exploring. These are things that she's going to be looking at. And if we do our job effectively and with the people like yourself, partnering with people like yourself to get that message out, my daughter will live in a world where there is sex, because that's a process, and there is pleasure, and that's an experience. And what I want to be able to do is lean into this conversation a little bit more, because you've done a lot of research. You've been part of massive clinical studies around pleasure. So this conversation for me is not about sex. It's not about like the husband not getting enough and the woman pushing it away. This is about, in an empowering context, around the idea that both men and women can get the opportunity to experience pleasure as a form of self-love. So let's dive into your idea and your concept and the strategies and the data behind pleasure.
Yeah.
So can you just go in a little bit or in depth, depending on how you want to go around this, is what was this study that you were doing at Rutgers?
Yeah. So once I embraced self-pleasure, not only did I launch Girl Boner, but just self-pleasure on a personal level became super important to me in my life, and also just a huge part of my mission, and not just sexual self-pleasure, as you mentioned, it's all important. But I really was so fascinated that I was reading everything that I could about it. And I learned that there was this scientist, Barry Komisarek, who got into orgasm research through working with people who were quadriplegic and thought that they couldn't experience orgasm. And by stimulating a particular nerve, they did. And so it was this very surprising finding. And that led him into studying the orgasm and brain. And there had been several journalists who participated in these studies. And I read an article, and I was so happy for this woman. And I was also very jealous, because I'm like, oh my gosh, this is like me. You get to be hooked up to a machine. I love the brain. I'm really into knowing like what happens in your body. And I was just on this high of self-pleasure. And I'm like, I want to be part of this. And it just so happened that at a World Sexual Health Day event that I was emceeing in New York, I sat at a table with the researchers, and they were like, sure, let's do this next time you're here. So the next year I was at Rutgers University, and the study was to look at what happens in the brain during arousal and or orgasm based on prompts. So basically I laid in this MRI tube, and there were words in front of me, and it would prompt me to think about somebody touching my nipple and then actually touch my own nipple. And then there was a control one that was a speculum, like the tool they use in the during your pap, which mm-hmm. is not very sexy. So they put something in there that would be like...
That's the duck, right?
What?
Is that the duck thing that you guys...
It's more like a tongs screwdriver.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't look like a duck. It's terrifying.
I thought it was like a duck. I don't know. I've never had a pap smear, believe it or not, guys. So sorry.
Yeah. Luckily, there are some newer...
For the male audience here, I don't know what that means.
Yeah,
it's not the most comfortable thing. There are some better ones being developed. But, and by the way, you can ask to insert it yourself at your next pap.
What?
A lot of people don't know that. Yeah.
Yeah,
because no, I feel like I'd be giving myself another hole. I wouldn't know where to put that. Are you kidding?
I have an
idea. That's a good point. That no, is a good point.
Imagine my
it's not for like, everyone.
That's the wrong hole.
I wonder, hopefully they would give you some guidance. Yeah. Although if you're more comfortable with them doing it, then for sure. Wow. Some people who've gone through different assaults and stuff like that, they have it's very triggering for them. Yeah, and so whatever, if you're feeling uncomfortable, always ask questions, always ask for support, have an advocate there if you need. But so anyway, one of them was to think about your clitoris and then actually touch your clitoris. And when I was on my way to the study, you know, there's all this fine print and the stuff that you have to read and sign. And I was in the middle of this trip for this particular job. And so I didn't do the most responsible thing. I read all the stuff kind of last minute and neglected to realize until then that I would have to be basically still. So you have to get yourself off very, very still. Like you can move your hand, but you can't. Like you have to have your head. I actually brought this so you could see. In case you've never had an MRI, this is my like Hannibal Lecter mask. This is what I had to wear. And wow. it bolted to the machine. Oh. So it's kind of like having a colander on top of your face and you can't move your head. And so I probably should have practiced, you know, self-pleasuring without moving very much. So I thought I was going to ruin the study because I'm also more of a belly down self-pleasure person. So there were all these things that I thought, oh my gosh, I'm not going to get off this way. Mm-hmm. I'm more internal. This was very external. And so when I got to the lab, I told the scientist, I'm like, I think I'm going to ruin the study. I'm so sorry. And he said something to me that I think is one of the key takeaways. And that was, whether you experience orgasm or not, it's helpful.
Right.
And what that did was I just relaxed because, oh, it doesn't matter if I come or not. They also said, I usually use a toy. And I said, I don't know that I've ever really come with just my fingers on the outside like this. And mm-hmm. he said, well, if you want to use a dildo for one, you can. So I got to do the study twice. And the first time I went through all these prompts. And first of all, it's taking a long time, or it felt very long, because I don't think many of us are that slow and measured in our self-pleasure. A lot of times we're just like, I'm going to just get off. And because it was so slow, the arousal was building up in my body, still didn't think I was going to orgasm. And then something happened where I felt this buildup and then sort of like a, I don't know, it was like this trickly feeling. It was pleasurable, but I thought it was more like surrender. And then the scientist asked, you know, are you finished? Do you want to keep going? And I was like, yeah, I'm done. And then he said, did you experience orgasm? And I was like, wait a minute. And I could tell my body had experienced an orgasm. I had been discounting clitoral orgasms as quote unquote small and not really an orgasm, because my idea of an orgasm was like a G-spot and this very huge, huge event, much more within my body. And so I wasn't expecting actually to learn much about my own body through this, right. But I did. I learned that all of these quote unquote small orgasms were orgasms. And that changed things for me because I now have much more pleasure in these ways. Now for like the mass audience, what they were looking at was, is it just as powerful, less powerful to think about these things than to actually feel it? And they found that thinking about touching versus just thinking about someone else touching is at least as powerful and sometimes more. So it shows how powerful fantasy is and how powerful the brain and the mind are in our pleasure experiences. So when we have shame and we're questioning ourselves, that can really get in the way.
Right. I just want to mention really briefly, like we just had a conversation about wet dreams.
This is what I was going to bring up.
Cause like
first time Brittany and I have ever talked about wet dreams.
Never. We've been together for literally forever. And we were just talking about this cause Ryan, you were like, I've never had a wet dream. And I'm like, I have. And he's like, what the fuck? Like he didn't know. And I'm like, it was bizarre because it feels like, you know, when you have, if you're sleeping, and you hear like a loud bang and you wake up and you're like, was that in my dream or did that actually happen? And so when I had like a wet dream, I feel like there needs to be like a female counter word because it just doesn't sound as like feminine.
It sounds
for
very
me.
Masculine because yes. we're talking about the male yes. experience.
A moist dream.
Oh my goodness. That's the worst.
Isn't that the worst word in the world? Yeah. Okay. I just wanted to double check that we're still on the same
page. I call
them
sleepgasms. I don't know if that's
a good word. Oh, sleepgasm's great. Yeah, so when I had a sleepgasm, I literally was like, what the fuck? I literally did not know what just happened. And then I was like, that is so bizarre, because the idea of you having that experience and not touching yourself blew my mind, because it's all literally all in your brain. And I was like, what the fuck? And like, I remember after this happened, because it was a while ago, I was like, I'm going to try to do this again. I couldn't. Like, it was hard to, like, you have to be so relaxed in a dreamlike state, completely comfortable, no shame around it. Like, you don't even realize it's happening. And I think it would obviously be able to, like, happen if there was training in it. And I remember watching a video about this woman who could literally orgasm when she thought about certain things, and she didn't have to touch herself. She was just like, mm-hmm. And I was like, no way. Yes way.
Yes way.
Like,
yeah.
Yes way. Wild, wild.
Yeah. And there is a study about that too, because the same researcher, women were telling him, oh, I can do this without touching at all. And he was like, what? So they studied that too. And they proved what we already knew, which was like, yeah, it's happening, you sure. know, but it's good to have to see it in the brain because, yeah, it can happen. I haven't been able to do it intentionally either. Mm-hmm. But I did feature a woman named Susanna on my podcast who she has, I call them thinkgasms or thinking off. And she had one in the car in LA traffic. So, yeah, wow. Which is not something I necessarily recommend, because I'm not sure how safe that is. I don't even know if she meant to in that moment. Way better.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it can happen. I mean, the mind is
awful. Now, August, the first time I ever met you, you had described having an orgasm eating Brussels sprouts.
Yes. Did you say meeting?
The first time I ever met August in LA,
I thought you said the first time she ever, like when she was meeting Brussels sprouts.
No.
Eating?
August had an orgasmic experience eating Brussels sprouts.
Yeah. Tell me, please.
I did. It was very surprising. I was at a writer's conference, and it was fiction writers, and my first book is a thriller. And so it was all like mystery writers, thriller writers, and it was very exciting. And I was at dinner at one of those like fancy hotel restaurants, and they brought up the Brussels sprouts, and they were just so delicious, like really like crispy and balsamic, but just like so, I mean, like one of the most perfect foods I think I ever have eaten. And I do think it was probably an accumulation of a lot of these exciting things happening. But when there's actually photos of me eating these Brussels sprouts, because one of my friends was like, what is going on over there? Because I was just really into these Brussels sprouts, and I was feeling it through my whole body down to my loins. And in the moment, all of a sudden I had this feeling, kind of how like when you woke up and you were like, yeah. What just happened? Like, I felt like I have to get out of here. Like, I had this feeling like, you know, like I'm going to pee or something.
Yeah.
I went up to my room and just like, I think I'd already kind of started to orgasm, but I just had this experience, not intentionally. And like I said, I haven't been able to. I've tried a few times to just come
always
with
ordering
my mind
Brussels
only.
Sprouts on every right. menu. Do you right, guys have exactly. Brussels sprouts on the menu?
Exactly. It was so incredible. Yeah. So you just never know.
We talked to somebody, I think a couple of years ago, who had the same experience when she ate an almond. Mm-hmm. She was like, this is the best fucking almond I've ever had in my life. And then had an orgasm. But that I think was mentally.
It all is. And this is
I mean, like she didn't go up to the hotel after and physically.
Oh, she didn't.
I think it was a conscious gasm from the almond.
We're creating all these new words.
Look at us.
See, the thing is for me, and you know, this podcast has a lot to do with couples, and it has a lot to do with relationships. And so one of the things that I really want our community to get from this is that pleasure is something that we all deserve. It's not something that is uniquely designed for men. And I believe truly, because statistics would show, you know, divorce rates are really high. And more often than not, the two real reasons for divorce when they actually ask is sex or lack of sex, lack of connection, lack of pleasure, and money. So money aside, if we look at sex from a place of, instead of it being task oriented, but being an experience and the pleasure. I feel like a lot of women don't feel safe asking to be pleasured. When I'll give you guys an example. We've never talked about this. When Brittany and I were first fornicating, we were enjoying ourselves. We were having a great time. We had an amazing connection, amazing bond. I remember actually thinking, this is what sex is supposed to feel like. That's the kind of connection I had with Brittany. But she never, ever came. And I remember the one time we were in the process of it, and I looked at her and I said, would you like to orgasm? And she looked at me and she said, yeah, I think I would. And then I remember you looking at me and you said, do you know how to do that? I'm like, yeah, I know how to do that. Because we had never talked about it. We'd never experienced it. And it was that was the first time that that you did. Mm-hmm. But it was with me. Yeah. But it was almost like I didn't realize up until then. And maybe this has been our relationship ever since. I didn't realize that you chose not to.
I don't know if it's necessarily.
I'm not saying that it's a choice not to. I'm saying you specifically chose not to experience the pleasure. And that was hard. That actually, it was really hurtful to me that I wasn't giving her that, or that she didn't feel safe to have that with me. Because ultimately, that's what I wanted for you. And I do feel like a lot of women don't have this conversation with their husbands. And maybe they don't even experience pleasure for themselves. When their husbands aren't around. Mm-hmm. The exploratory side of pleasure, I don't think women give themselves enough time to do. Mm. That's sad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I think it's hard because we talk about, like, choosing, right? Like, I was definitely a choice in the past where I was like, no, like, don't be needy. And I think it's weird, too, because personally, like, well, I've shared everything else, so let's continue. I have a really... I cannot have internal G-spot orgasms. Like, I've tried a lot. It's painful for me. So we've just said deuces, no bueno. So it's always external. And so with that in our relationship, Ryan knows that. So like, it'll be like after he has finished, it's like, let me cater to you.
Not always. Sometimes yeah. I'm not always the first one.
No.
Just be very clear, everybody.
No, but because I've always say like, I can't go first. Otherwise I'm like, I'm out. Like, I'm so sensitive.
Yeah. Once Brittany has an orgasm, she's done.
So I never want to take that from him. And we have something going there. Anyways, I guess
we got something going there.
I feel like it's harder to perhaps ask or advocate for yourself if you don't have those internal G-spot orgasms, because you're like a male, especially when we were younger, like they're just assuming that that's going to happen. And yes, obviously sex feels good for me, not for everybody, but it feels good. But like, that doesn't always equate to a G-spot orgasm. So like after that's done, and he was like, wow, that was amazing. And I'm like, yeah, great. Like, see you later. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I don't like, was it good for you? Yeah, it was good. But like, how do I say, can I do an add-on? Like, is this an a la carte? Like, I'd like to add something else to this afterwards, because it's just assumed that because it's pleasurable for them, that it's the same it's for over. Us and it's not.
When the male orgasms, right. It's often over. Like, yeah. There's cleanup to right. be done and all that fun stuff. Like, it's not the movies where you roll over and have a Ryan Coke.
Could you give some of your professional advice to perhaps a couple who, because I know we do have questions that people do ask, you know, who, how would you advocate for a woman who maybe does have difficulty asking for self-pleasure? Like, is it something that you would say she should start on her own first and then go this way? Like, what's your advice around that?
That's a great question. I definitely think knowing what you really want is the first step. And that often does come through self-pleasure. It can also come from partner experiences. That's how I experienced sex first for a long time. So wherever you're starting is great. But I do think that knowing your body is key first. And then one thing I would recommend, because a lot of people do have a hard time asking for things, especially during sex, because it doesn't feel very sexy when someone's doing something and you're like, yeah, that's cool. But also, because it feels like we're rejecting someone, or if you haven't had conversations about sex, which I definitely recommend having, but if you haven't had them outside of sex, it's hard to ask for something during. So having conversations about sex is key. And then I think making it fun is a really good idea, because it can feel very daunting. So are you familiar with yes, no, maybe lists?
Yes, we did that with Susan Bratton, mm-hmm. where it was like you had a pre-existing list. It was a suggestion. I'd answer them. Then Ryan would answer it. Yes, yes. No, maybe not. Yeah, they're great.
Yeah, I think those are fantastic. You can make your own that specifically has things that you are curious about mm-hmm. because a lot of times some of them are all about kink, for example. Well, what if you're literally starting at, I want to just know what feels good down there, you know, right. then you could have something all about different activities to try, whether it's oral, whether it's hand, whether it's penetration, whether it's with a toy. Mm-hmm. I think that can be really powerful. You can also start like a little jar of things that you have fantasized about that would feel good, little piece of paper. And then when you get to sex, just pull something out that you know you're going to mm-hmm. love. Just it just makes it so light. And it also brings novelty. And novelty mm-hmm. really kickstarts those. And we know this from research, those feel good hormones linked with falling in love. So you can mm-hmm. keep those sparks alive over time. I think that's really, really big. Gosh, I think those would be like the first places to start.
Now, with respect to toys, we personally don't like calling them toys. We look at them as tools. Yeah. And so using tools, a lot of men that I've talked to since we've entered into the TEM space and into the TEM world, we started having a lot more conversations with people. And I was shocked to find how many men resist the use of toys or tools because they feel like they're being replaced. Mm. Right. But I'd like to spend a millisecond on that and debunk that. Can I steal you for a second to debunk that for us?
Oh my gosh. I love this topic. It's so important. Yes. So a lot of people do think, oh, there's something wrong with me or what I'm doing if I bring in lube or a vibrator or a dildo or a cock ring. And it could not be further from the truth. Those things are all, as you say, tools. They are enhancements, and they don't only improve pleasure for the female partner, but they also improve pleasure to whoever's having sex with that person. So if you have a penis and your partner takes out a dildo, which I also recommend, if you have not experienced an orgasm with your partner, show them, have an orgasm in front of them and say that you want to watch them too. How hot would that be? You know, side by side masturbation. So hot. Do it. I think it's such a good activity.
Yes, I agree.
I really do.
I'm not, but that's okay. It's a maybe that's okay. for me.
Yes, definitely talk about it because it's not for everyone. And neither are toys and other tools. So, but yeah, that is such a huge myth. And this idea that you have to be either lonely or not a good lover to use a toy, it's a compliment if somebody says, I want more pleasure with you. Let's play with this. Mm-hmm. It's really, really, truly an add-on, and it's something to bring something new and fun. And it's so easy to say it in a way, too, because I think how it's presented can make a difference. If you say to your partner, I'm not having orgasms, can I please get my vibrator? That does not really mm-hmm. feel as good as if you're saying, how would you feel if we brought a toy into our play next time, or even two toys? We could each choose one, because I was listening to this podcast or I read this study and I heard that like it can be really mind blowing and just something new to try. You know, just make it appealing and fun when you talk about it mm-hmm. from both sides. And then if somebody is bringing you something about sex, I have a lot of compassion for folks who feel like, oh, there's something wrong with me because my partner said they need a toy, because they do learn that the penis is supposed to do it all, you know, like it's just supposed to go in there. It's supposed to happen quickly. And so mm-hmm. if you think that they need a prosthetic or however you're thinking about it in your mind, it's not going to feel good. So I think if you have that feeling where someone requests something, taking a pause, if possible, thanking them for the information, just say like, thank you for sharing that. This is new to me. I'd love to just think about it for a minute. Mm-hmm. Like just step away from it, because chances are if you do a little self-reflection, you'll realize that, oh, I never learned about toys. I'm just making all these assumptions. And so many problems about sex involve assumptions. Mm-hmm. And they're assumptions based on these damaging myths.
Right.
Yeah. I that's so fascinating. And if you ever explore the world of porn, all of the things that pop up are literally all of the insecurities men have. Last longer, pleasure her more, get harder, get bigger. All of these things are just attacking the thing that we think is wrong with us. And when our partner suggests bringing something outside of us into it, we immediately go to, I'm not doing it right. I'm not good enough. I'm not big enough, or whatever, or hard enough, or whatever the case may be. And I love what you just said and how you framed it. It's an add-on. It's an experience. It's a connection, and it's a safe. And if someone feels safe asking you to receive additional pleasures, because they want to experience more pleasure with you. So thank you for squashing that. That's huge.
August, can you tell everybody if they want to find some more information on you, where they can reach you on socials, the name of your book, and just reiterate what your podcast is, just so that we can throw some love back to you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. So you can go to augustmclaughlin.com or earlboner.org. That girlboner.org is blocked on most social media platforms, but they go to the same site. So August McLaughlin, McLaughlin. My podcast is called Girl Boner Radio, and you can search Girl Boner. It's two words with a space in the middle, and I pop up everywhere.
Perfect.
Girl Boner is your podcast is not just your podcast. It is ranked one of the podcasts to listen to in the world of sex.
It's fabulous.
It's a top ranked podcast. And what was the publication? Was it it was Balesa that named you, right?
And you were in the New York Times too, right?
My book was featured in the New York Times. So I have a book called Girl Boner, The Good Girl's Guide to Sexual Empowerment. My podcast is definitely through a femme lens, but it's for all genders. And my book also, I think people of all genders are absolutely welcome to experience it. I did write the book with women and femmes in mind. And it's really a guide to make your own. It's full of true stories and exercises, journaling prompts. There's a yes, no, maybe list in my Girl Boner journal, which is more like a workbook. And it's an audiobook as well. So yeah, I'm really passionate about all of these topics. And I feel so lucky to share folks' stories. I learn from them. I hear from folks too. We all see ourselves in these stories, even when it seems completely different on the surface. And I feel honored that people trust me with them. A lot of the folks I interview are actually anonymous, and they just really want to share their story. But again, whether you share your story, whether you listen to my podcast or share your story in some sort of public way, or you write yourself a love letter to your, write to yourself about your body and your sexuality, that to me is just as meaningful. And I think it changes the world.
Amazing. Love it. Well, thank you so much. We're on the same mission.
Appreciate you.
So
I love
being
teammates.
Thank you for assisting us in that.
Have a good one.
You as well.
Bye. Thank you.
Take care. Bye. I